we go.
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
I fight for the users.
The CPU is a neural net processor, a learning computer.
Welcome, everybody, to Tech to You Tuesdays. I've got with me today, again, Ryan is in the house.
Yep.
And we have a lot. We did went over a lot last week, but I got a lot of messages that I want to go over this week. There's a lot of news I want to go over this week. I got a lot of little things to hit, so we're going to kind of go bit by bit by bit as fast as I can. But the first thing I want to do, I'm sorry to make your emails. You guys had really good questions. I'm going to have to make you wait for a second because Ryan came up with the whole show today, basically. Yeah. So you found a website, and this website is a tool which makes music for you using AI.
Yep.
Go ahead and give the brief little description. How'd you get there? What'd you do with it?
So I found a Rolling Stone article talking about it, just kind of showing it off. You give it a prompt like any other AI tool, and it will generate lyrics, a title. It'll synthesize vocals for those lyrics and synthesize what all of the instruments should sound like to accompany it based on whatever genre it assigns to the music it makes or genre that you request that it use.
And when you say you give it a prompt, for anybody who doesn't know, that just simply means you wrote in a text box.
You write whatever ridiculous thing you want to write to it, and it interprets that message and makes your request happen.
So let's say that you had a friend who's a professional music producer, and you were like, "Hey, I'm looking for this really upbeat jam for my podcast. Can you make that for me?"
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know anything about music. Can you do that? That is basically what this is doing.
Yes.
But on top of that, it's also getting the artists and making the lyrics, and it is making different versions and allowing very, very, very fast creation.
I mean, 30 seconds. Tops.
30. So 30 seconds, you're waiting to get about a 1 minute clip typically.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to hit this topic a few times through the show today. I think it's good to demo sometimes the positive stuff of AI. I mean, this isn't positive for music producers.
No, but it was
fun for us.
It's been entertaining.
So I'm gonna play Ryan's first hit, which he, by the way, fully owns the licenses to this music. So please,
yeah, pay me.
Don't. Yeah. So when you have Suno, Suno.ai, Suno.ai is the website. When you have them generate music for you, you own the rights. So we're playing Ryan's.
Asterisk. Yeah. If you pay for the pro,
that's
if
true.
You
yeah,
do
thank
it
you.
Free, you don't.
Yeah.
Get
so Ryan
rights.
Pays for the pro license, and he's got. His first hit, we're going to play it live on the radio. You're
on the radio.
I'm getting produced.
Look,
you're getting produced on the radio.
Look at me, Mom.
I didn't even think about that until just now. So, okay, here's Ryan's first grand hit, and it is called
Womp Womp.
Womp Womp. Okay, let me get my mutes right here. All right, let's play it. So I'm just going to pull it down. I'm going to let it play in the background a little bit here for a second.
Set the tone.
Set this. God, if this is the tone for our podcast, we got to talk about different stuff. But so this is a 2 minute clip, and it's 2 minutes because you didn't provide it or you didn't tell it to make any lyrics.
I specified to make it an instrumental.
Okay. Yeah. Now, just like listening to this jam, I kind of can't help but feel like this feels a lot like hold music, elevator music. But the thing is, for those that don't know, like that is actually, I'm going to kill this song real quick here. For those that don't know, that is a big industry, elevator music and hold music. Like
sure.
There's a lot of money to be made there. You know, like, we use a phone system that has integrated, like hold music in it, and somebody got paid money for those,
yeah.
for those files. So we can just make our own and make them sound however we want.
Why
so
not?
Anyway, we're going to revisit this a few times throughout the show today, just to keep it kind of fun, but, just to keep things moving along. I'm going to move on to my first, topic today. And it is an email. I got a great email about, how to protect Android phones, for parents. I've talked about how to use a feature on iPhones in the past. So you're a parent, you have a child that, or I don't know, you're a wife and you have a husband who you want to have stop looking at stuff, who you want to have somebody stop looking at stuff on their phone that they shouldn't have access to. On iPhones, I have recommended people use the built-in software called Screen Time. There's a lot of third-party applications out there, but it is probably the best option. You could add to it, but on Android, which is not where I operate daily, there are other options. And so I got an email. Let me pull this up real quick. The email says, Ian, I know you talk about cell phone safety often. I'm hoping you can help me with my unique situation. My son has an S23. Lucky kid. That's like a brand new phone.
Yeah.
Well, when you're old, but yeah, brand new. He has been using Snapchat, Instagram, and Discord because some of his friends use those apps instead of texting. He and his friends started sharing inappropriate content. And after doing some research, I settled on an app called Custodio to protect his phone. Boy, I can't imagine what life would have been like having the ability to send picture text messages in high school. I'm so glad social media didn't exist in that way.
A picture message would have showed up on your bill.
That's right.
You would have had to explain that.
Oh, God. Oh, man, I'm like embarrassed thinking about the things that could have been. So I'm going to take the very short part of Brett's email here and extrapolate on it a bit for you. Brett's concern is that his child is still getting access to using these applications even after installing a program called Custodio. That's actually something that I have recommended on the show before. We recommend it, Tech2U, as an option. They're not like a partner to us or anything like that, but I've used it. Custodio, I feel like, works great on my son's computer, but on a phone, phones are different. Their operating systems are different. The way that they react to stuff that stops them from doing things is different. And in his case, in Brett's case, it stopped working after a software update, which makes total sense, especially because the most recent software updates with Apple and Android have been very focused on user privacy. So that prevents things like applications talking to other applications. And the purpose of that is your safety, your privacy, your security. So applications like Custodio, which is a great choice, again, I think for PC, is not quite as effective anymore. So I'm going to make a suggestion for you. With Android, there is another option, but it's like Apple's version of Screen Time, Google uses something called Family Link. It is pretty robust. It's an app you can download on your Android phone. You can add your child into your Google Family, is what they call it. And you can set limitations. And those limitations should stay in effect after a software update because it's native to Google. It's like using their own software. What I will tell you is that from my, 15 minutes or so of using it over the last weekend, it's cumbersome and a bit confusing. I wouldn't say that it is for like the lighthearted with technical stuff, but it does work.
Technically not all that hard to get around either.
Well, it could, yes, you can get around it. And Ryan's makes a good point. I actually wasn't going to mention that, but it is very true. Any one of these on Android that prohibits the phone from doing certain things absolutely can be worked around with a little practice and a little research. You can find ways around pretty much all of this. On an iPhone, it is way harder. It's incredibly hard because and this is the benefit of Apple doing the thing that us technicians kind of hate is they don't let us customize it. They don't let us do our own thing with it. And we'll actually get into that because there's laws trying to affect Apple to allow users to do things with their phones that they can't right now. But the upside of Android is you do have like full control of your device. You can do whatever you want with it. You can install whatever you want on it. But as a downside, users have a little bit more freedom than what you might want them to. So in a lot of corporate environments, you will see users using iPhones. It's just a common thing because it's a little bit better locked down. So I'm sorry for the bad news. He probably paid for a Custodio license. But I can't say with a lot of confidence that is going to work for you again after the next software update. Whereas using, at least for now, Google Family Link will provide you more than likely better protection than what you've been dealing with. A little cumbersome to set up, but should be pretty effective overall. Speaking of Androids, there was some Android news that I also wanted to go over. This is kind of, I guess it's funny because if I'm just talking to a broad audience and I say there's Android news and it's exciting for me, and I just hope that the audience that's listening to that is like, oh, okay, yeah, we get it. You're a nerd. Yeah. This is why you're excited. It's fine. It's okay. Like, I don't take any offense. So Google is going to be bringing satellite messages to Android 15. And that is the headline of the article, and it is very true as far as I can tell. I've read a little bit about it. The way that we've discovered this is that Google releases what's called a developer preview of their operating system. So we just talked about how Android will update their operating system on the phone and stuff might break or change or whatever. Yep. Well, for nerds like us, we often sign up for the developer preview so we can get access to those new features before anybody else.
Yeah.
Or beta test them for Google and say like, oh yeah, here's some bugs I found. And so you can fix them before you roll it out to the general public. In this developer preview, it was determined that there is a function which allows for users to send a text message using satellite communications. And Apple just recently announced this feature. This is on their most recent or the generation before iPhone. I think it was the iPhone 14 it came out on, which at this point is like a year and a half ago. Mm. And the way it worked is like, imagine you're stuck, I don't know, out in the desert. And you're, you know, you've got...
People go outside?
We wouldn't know what that, like the sunlight thing that people get and vitamin D. Like I just drink my OJ. I don't go outside.
My pill. Vitamin D comes pills. In a pill. What do you mean?
What are you doing drinking juice? You got to go to the store sunlight. And get juice. You get stuck out in the wilderness and you are lost. And so if you didn't have a satellite phone or you're not a Boy Scout or whatever, you're not familiar with how to find your way back to civilization, a lot of people have died. I mean, people die every year from this all over the planet. And giving accessible options to the average everyday person to not go out and buy a $1,000 satellite phone or like a really fancy GPS tracker with emergency contact functions built into it. The fact that new phones are rolling out and Android is obviously going to be allowing this as a feature is really exciting. I mean, there's a trail that I went on a hike on just south of South Lake Tahoe. And so for anybody not listening in the Sacramento or Reno area, that's kind of between Sacramento and Reno in Northern California. And on this particular hike, the hike up was like 2 hours. It was really long, like difficult terrain. And then a lot of areas where we didn't see people at all, the trail totally disappeared at times. And I was thinking to myself, like, I'm glad that I've got my friends with me who have done this before, because I've been not sure where we're going for like 10 minutes, you know? Yeah. But I would have felt way more confident. This is years ago that we did this hike, obviously when I was in shape and, you know, spent less time indoors. I would have felt a lot more confident just even on that little journey with something that allowed satellite communications. So, you know, in an emergency, you effectively can send a text message that says, I'm stuck and I need help. And this is, where I am, because it just sends your GPS coordinates and come save me. And then hopefully some nice fella in a helicopter comes down and
saves you,
takes you back. So I'll be your nice fella in the helicopter. Next segment. Is that a good segue?
Sure.
We got some more news for you coming right back. So this is, I told you I was going to get back to Ryan's AI generated music from the website Suno.ai.
This was one of the only ones that I like iterated and merged the songs together. So that was like a 3.5 minute one.
So that one, obviously I cut down and I just gave you the intro for it. But that, what was your prompt on that one? Cause that's like swing, like 20, like
that swing, was like electro swing, electro big house. Swing. Drum and bass.
And that was also just an instrumental again.
Yeah. Right? Told it to do an instrumental. And when you make it, it'll give you two versions and they'll be slightly different or have variances in them. Mm. And then you can remix from those and use them as a jumping off point or build on them to make a part two. And then eventually
you could say like reference my part one.
Exactly. And then take those iterations and make them get referenced back to the original until you eventually merge whatever you want
get
for the final
like
song.
A 3 to 5 minute song. Yeah. If you wanted, can you go that long as far as you know, get to like,
yeah,
5 minutes?
You just, you like a full. I've been seeing some where people can tell it when to kind of end. You could say like end at 2 minutes and 45 seconds and it will do that instead.
So believe it or not,
a lot to play with.
Suno.ai is not sponsored. We don't have sponsors.
No, it's just the most fun I've spent on an AI.
This is such a cool thing for us. It just to talk about like this technology a little bit, we have talked ad nauseum of the language learning models, which are the, you know, the ChatGPTs and the Google Bards and those services. And I think it's kind of I think it's important to highlight these other things that don't necessarily hit the mass public quite as much. I mean, I think most people are interested in music in some very small level at minimum. And it's kind of fun to have the idea of creating your own music. But most people, I think, kind of stop there as like, I don't know that I'll actually go to this website and make an account. But my point here in even demonstrating this is that AI has infiltrated every aspect of what we do. I mean, for the most part at this point, and it has happened so fast. I mean, just a year ago, the idea of talking about AI the amount that we have in this last year, I would have never guessed, you know? And it's basically like as soon as ChatGPT hit the market and started doing well, it just really, really took off from there. As far as tools like this are concerned, this is an AI tool which is very focused, and it can do things like analyze existing music and figure out instruments and the frequency at which a drum is hit and timing and choruses and, you know, lyrics that are appropriate and rhyme schemes. In fact, you had it do an underground hip hop song.
Yeah.
Was there any mid verse rhyme schemes, or was it all end of verse?
I didn't look for that very thoroughly, because like 75% of the versions of anything that I tried to make that had lyrics for hip hop songs were really just what an AI thinks humans sound like.
Yeah, they're pretty
and
bad.
It would be more like the guttural noises of a person singing rather than actual words coming out.
Yeah.
And so that got scrapped pretty quick.
Yeah, there was definitely like a level of I don't even know the right word to use for it. I don't want to say discrimination, because that's a very extreme word, but it was a level of
It kind of got an answer using the wrong equation. You know?
Yeah. It just didn't feel good. pumping out underground hip hop music and the way that it was producing it. What I will say was really impressive was the beats. Like, yeah. I'm not a musician by any account, but I do enjoy music maybe a little bit more than the average person. And I was surprised at how the beat just sounded like a legitimate. There was a whole thing with MF Doom. So anybody who doesn't know, MF Doom is a rapper and not necessarily known for A-list hits or anything, but very popular amongst the hip hop community, especially. He passed recently, and for whatever reason, you can't prompt Suno.ai.
That was the only thing that I ever ran into that it wouldn't let me do a prompt.
And we don't really know why. I don't know. We don't know for sure if the reason was that his name is blacklisted from being used as a source for creating AI generated material.
Copyright,
or maybe it's because he passed recently. I don't know. But yeah, it was kind of interesting. But listening to the beats that it came up with, and even the way the lyrics kind of flowed, as muddy as they kind of were, still super impressive.
Yeah.
So as far as an AI focused tool, you know, you're listening to some of these silly examples, and I'll play another one for you later with lyrics. But they do really have an impact on stuff. Like, I've been using legitimate music for our commercial audio returns, and the audio that you heard coming back was AI generated, and I could just keep doing that for stuff that we think is more appropriate to the segment, I guess, you know, kind of wild. So I had an email from, this is from Randy and Truckee. Randy said, I wanted to see if you would chat a little bit about the EU investigation into Meta, Alphabet, and Apple. I believe Google is being investigated for prioritizing themselves in search inquiries, and something about Apple's payer consent. I'm not sure what that is. I was hoping you could shed some light on the subject, if it's not too boring. Well, I will make it quick, because I do think that it can get boring for a lot of people really quick. But also, I think that this is definitely not my specialty when it comes to businesses being sued by governments. Like, I'll follow the news a little bit, but the very short of this is that the EU, the European Union, is definitely a lot more focused on user privacy, user security, user accessibility and fairness, and much more so than our, the American government is. Yeah. At least that's how it has been for this last year. There's been a lot of EU changes that have really affected us in a positive way, forcing changes that affect us as well. So to very briefly go over this, what the EU is proposing is the early steps of what could eventually lead to a breakup of these companies in a way. And that's, it's very vague because it has not yet been publicly defined as to what, you know, the goals are and what they plan to do. But I think that the reason why the stocks are down for these businesses today is because the concern is that companies like Google will no longer be able to control advertising to the masses in the way that they do now. Companies like Apple won't be able to restrict businesses from putting things on their app store. I don't really honestly know. I didn't read enough into it to tell you why Meta is in the mix. Meta runs Facebook. They own Oculus, which is a VR company. They're a huge company, don't get me wrong. Yeah. But I don't really feel like they have a lot of products that they make that are very quote-unquote anti-competitive.
Yeah, I don't know what space they'd be anti-competitive in. I feel like most of their stuff is targeted for like consumer privacy.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, their social media, they do a lot of things that are, I feel like, are shady and borderline anti-competitive, but there's nothing stopping a competitor from... God, it's such a tough statement to say so broadly, but there's nothing stopping a competitor from making another Facebook. Sure. And I mean, it's obviously a massive undertaking. It's, I can't say that like as it's obviously it would take a lot of money and time, but I can tell you that the easy targets with the EU focusing on these businesses are things that I can see directly as a consumer. Like for example, Tech2U, or at least the ownership of Tech2U is the same ownership of Circles for the most part. We've built an app. That app goes through the Apple App Store. And in order to get it to go into the App Store, we have to get through Apple's approval process. Now, Google does do something similar, but their approval process is a lot smaller. And then another thing that Apple does that's very different is, like, let's say, for example, and this is a kind of a pro tip you might want to pay attention to. If you're signing up for a Netflix account using the Netflix app on your phone, you're very likely going to pay a higher percentage or a higher dollar amount for your monthly subscription than if you just went to Netflix.com on your computer and signed up.
Right. The split that they've got to pay for the app store.
And the reason for that is that split. So Apple says if anybody signs up for a subscription of any kind in an app on our store, we get 30%. 30% is a pretty massive cut. Now, if in the beginning it was... You could put your, I mean, do you remember like the very first apps were like the pretend drinking a beer app on an iPhone?
Red and blue flashing light simulator.
Yeah, right. I mean, there was, you know, very, very simple in the early days of the App Store. And some of these apps were a dollar. That was really common. And it's funny how like even to this day, it's like, I'm not sure if I want to spend a dollar on this app or not. Yeah. But, you know, a percentage of that dollar, typically 30% or less, I think often less. Would go to Apple. But at this point, Apple is getting a piece of that subscription every month for whatever you have. It's the reason why Fortnite has been gone from the App Store for so long, because Epic, the creators of Fortnite, have little add-ons in the game. Mm-hmm. And they weren't paying Apple their cut. So Apple completely removed them from the App Store and they were gone for years.
And then they make it so that it opened a separate browser window to do the transaction in the app, and that's what got them removed.
It is, yeah. And so Apple just said, yeah, you know, you're violating the terms. And they weren't even like really being hard about it. They just said, hey, you're violating the terms. Can you fix this? And then we'll leave your app in the store. Tim Sweeney, the CEO of Epic Games, the guy who it makes the decisions for what Fortnite is and does, said no. So as a result, Apple said, well, okay, well then our hand is forced. And I will give Apple credit for that, is that they didn't like fine them. They didn't sue them. They didn't just remove them from the store without warning. They said, right. Hey, you know, you're violating the terms. We have an agreement. You signed it. Can you please make sure that you follow our agreement? So the reason why it is being held up in a court of law is because it is, in a lot of ways, very anti-competitive. Apple owns a massive amount of the marketplace of where people get apps from. So the rate that they charge is very monopolistic in nature. It's not like we as a consumer have a way to go get that app from some other place at a lower price. If you use an iPhone, you get the app from the Apple Store.
Right.
And if you pay the Apple Store price, Apple gets their cut. So, you know, I'm not saying that it's right or wrong. I have opinions on it. But I do think it's worthy of investigation, and I get why they're doing it. With regards to Google, Google is one of the largest, and Facebook is right up there with them, largest advertisers on the planet. And, you know, we could easily spend, you know, tens of thousands of dollars with Google every month for advertising in the computer repair industry. Right. And we're competing with everybody else in the computer repair industry, but Google sets the price. Yes, we are competing with the other people in the industry that kind of helps drive that price where it's at, but ultimately Google is the one setting the rate. And considering the vast majority of searches online for a product or a service are coming from Google still, mm-hmm. well, they get to determine that price. So I think until we start seeing companies like OpenAI who make ChatGPT or other AI tools becoming more prominent for searches than Google, which I would predict will happen, then I think Google's pricing will come down, and then OpenAI is going to start figuring out a way to integrate marketing fees as well. That's my guess. Right. So anyway, that's kind of the short, it went on a little longer than I'd expected, but that's kind of the short of why there's so much talk about these companies, being in hot water with the EU. So moving on, I have one of the things I really pride myself on with doing this podcast and this radio show and being on Rad TV is my incredibly in-depth and important job of journalism. And I have a very high level of journalistic integrity, which is why I bring up such important news every week. Like, for example, Notepad in Windows. Guess what? It's getting spell check, baby.
I wouldn't have even been able to tell you that it didn't have it already.
So I actually only wanted to talk about this because I thought it was so funny that I found an article that was specifically talking about, like, guess what? Notepad. Getting spell check. Like, oh my God. But it is actually kind of funny because I thought it would be a good opportunity to give a little bit of a pro tip. How often do you use Notepad on your PC?
I don't.
Never?
No.
I use it every day. At least once a day. And the reason for that is because Notepad has always been for me the easiest way to strip formatting of text. Mm. So let's say, for example, I found something on a website or I got an email from somebody and it's got like bold and underlines and font colors and a weird font type that's being used. And I'm like, oh, okay, I want to copy this text and I want to put it in my Word document, my proposal, my email, my whatever. And then
your plagiarized document.
My plagiarism, right? Yeah, I want to plagiarize this and I want to put it here. And when I copy and paste, it's like, oh man, I had all this stuff worded out. And then when I copied from this place and I pasted to this place, the formatting's all messed up. So that's not uncommon.
Can't you just paste without?
Depending on the application that you're in, yes. Okay. But not in all applications.
Oh, that's because you use like Mac products, huh?
Well, that's part of it. But even just for copying from, let's say, a website to another website. Like I recently copied an article from, it was like New York Times or something like that, into ChatGPT. The article was, I don't remember, so long I didn't want to read it. And I was like, I don't even know if this is worth my time talking about on the show. So I copy the article, I paste it in ChatGPT, but it inserted all of this HTML junk.
I see.
And I can't paste as plain text as easily there, depending on the interface for ChatGPT that you use. So I just copy it, paste it in a Notepad, copy it again out of Notepad, and then paste it where I want it, and it strips the formatting. So I find myself using Notepad a lot. It is actually kind of a valuable tool for just really, really simple text with no formatting or getting rid of the formatting. It's a cool way for, like, if you have a Word document, this is so common, where you've got a Word document up and you're writing stuff, and you're like, why is it that when I hit Enter, it's like three spaces.
How much is what Microsoft is paying you for this Notepad spot?
I know, right? Yeah, I swear to God, we're not sponsored by anybody. I just very, very, very
unusually enthusiastic about Notepad.
I know. Yeah, you know what's funny is I would have assumed that you've been like, I use it every day. We didn't rehearse this at all. So Yeah, anyway, as far as Notepad is concerned, cool tool, something that you can use stripping, you know, formatting from and getting it into other places really easily. Just getting your text into raw text. Sometimes you'll use that, like, quote unquote, paste as plain text, and it still copies over weird attributes of the text. So just some ideas. And you know, like I said, you know, in journalistic integrity, I'm just so proud of being able to bring such important news like Notepad getting.
Great.
We're all better. Moving on. So moving on. I had a couple of other questions I wanted to get through. Let's see here. I got an email from, let's see, this is from Juan. Juan says, hi, everyone. Question about buying used PC parts, more specifically used graphics cards. I'm aware that buying used, there's always a risk, but I wanted to know if you had any pointers or recommendations when buying a used graphics card. I purchased my kid an entry-level gaming PC 2 years ago in hopes to upgrade it as along the way, and now I was wondering if it'd be a good to, or he says, wait, now that we're ready, I was wondering if it's a good idea to buy used PC parts.
What was that little adjustment they were making to cards? The LHR variants?
Oh, for
low hash rate? So
yeah,
you could...
Yeah. Crypto
mining. They're less likely to be used for crypto mining because they weren't as efficient.
Yeah, those cards were more expensive for some time, but I think that they've tanked in price now, haven't
probably
they?
Just as well as any other one.
So I guess to give you a very black and white answer to your question, how do we feel about buying used PC parts? We feel great about that when we buy them from each other.
Yeah, if you trust the person who
we've sold cards in amongst each other within our, you know, small group of the Sacramento employees and Tech2U. As far as like buying a card from somebody, you know, it's just, yeah, it really all kind of does come down to, do you trust that they're telling you that it's good? Because
are they sending you a picture of it that they found on the internet, or just a product shot of it?
I mean, even if it's like
the actual condition of it,
even if it's like a Craigslist thing or, you know, Facebook Marketplace, and you meet somebody and you're like, yeah, here's my, you know, GTX 3060, whatever it
sure,
is.
Sure, let me
got.
Bring along my tower to Starbucks and plug
yeah,
it in and make
you know,
sure it posts.
That's the thing is like you like a video card is one of those components that you don't really know if it's bad until you push it. So yeah. Like when people bring computers into our shops, we run
Benchmarks.
FurMark is still free, isn't it? That's a free tool.
FurMark, Heavenbench, UserBench,
so there's
a whole bunch of
different
stuff. Different
tools, but FurMark is one of the ones that I'm a little bit more familiar with just because I haven't done the daily computer repair work as often. But FurMark is a free tool, FurMark. You can download it and push the graphics card to an extreme, and it shouldn't fail. It'll get really, really hot, but it shouldn't fail if it's good. So, you know, tools like that exist, and I would recommend using something like that if you can to do some testing on it before you buy it. But obviously, that puts you in kind of a weird situation.
Most private sellers probably won't sit there for an hour while you constantly benchmark it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I got another email here from, I'm going to say no name. I was wondering about and curious about upgrading to Windows 11. It says I need to enable TPM 2.0 on my PC. And I went through the steps. I built my PC about 2 years ago during the whole COVID thing, but it's asking me to legit wipe almost everything, even though I back it up on Windows Cloud. Do I actually have to do this to upgrade to Windows 11, or am I missing something? I would appreciate any and all the help you can give me. Well, you shouldn't. Generally speaking, if everything is working as intended, you shouldn't necessarily have to wipe your operating system just to upgrade to 11. If you have 10 or even 8.1, you should be able to do a direct to 11 upgrade, I believe.
Yeah, it should give you the option.
Yeah, and if you don't, the best I can really say without looking into it further is there's probably something wrong. Now, as far as TPM 2.0, this is an interesting little fact, I guess. When Windows 11 came out, they basically said, we will support every computer that has TPM 2.0, this much memory, and at least this processor. It's kind of the basics. There was more to it than that's very much the basics. And when they said it's at least this generation of Intel processor or higher, most of us in the industry were like, whoa, that's kind of new.
Yeah.
Like, that's surprising that you're going to not allow, you know, a third gen. If it's not that old, like even going back 10 years seems real, like reasonable to make a new operating system work.
My seventh gen processor wasn't compatible.
So, well, and it's kind of like that was our first shock. But then when the next one was like, you need TPM 2.0 for it to install, TPM 2.0 means, do you know what TPM stands for? I forget.
Trusted Platform Module.
Thank you. It is a piece of hardware that's on the motherboard of your computer. And this hardware is either existent or it's not. Now, that's not to say that there's not workarounds if you don't have TPM 2.0. It's a little bit more complicated. But if you have it, it basically secures your data, your operating system at a higher degree than what prior Windows operating systems did. And so they require this hardware to be present for Windows 11 to work. What sucks is that a lot of relatively new computers didn't come with it. And I think a lot of manufacturers were blindsided by these restrictions to get Windows 11 out. So, you know, major motherboard manufacturers, Asus is a great example, weren't fully prepared to have all of their boards for the few years prior to the Windows 11 release having TPM 2.0 on them. Had they known that that was going to be a component that would have helped, maybe they would have installed it, or maybe they would have said, well, maybe we'll sell more motherboards if we don't include it and they have to buy another one later.
Thankfully, it seems like there was pretty broad adoption of the software-based TPMs, firmware TPM.
The workaround, if you will. So the answer to your question is, I can't really tell you the answer to your question, unfortunately, unless we can look at it. Tech2 does free diagnostics. You can call us. You go to tech2.com, TECH2U.com, and just dial the number there up on the top, and we'll log in for you for free and tell you at no charge if that is absolutely needed. We do free remote support diagnostics. So, but we'd love to help if we can get the opportunity to. So another topic I wanted to go over, we'll try to go through this as quickly as we can. I'm just going to read you the article headline here first. 3 million hotel room doors can be hacked in 13,000 hotels across 131 countries.
I was actually glad you found this article because I was talking to my wife about it over the weekend.
Were you guys thinking about staying somewhere?
No, we had talked about traveling in February. And I was like, oh, hear about this, and told her how it works and how quickly somebody can get in.
So I'm going to give you the rundown of what this kind of means. You leave your hotel room with all your stuff in it. You come back and your stuff is gone. So it's pretty much that easy.
Done deal.
Now for the technical side, it was found that a brand of lock. So anybody who's been in a hotel in the last, 10 years, I think they've been using those cards. At least, popularly, you know, you get a little card at the front counter, you tap the card up to the lock in your hotel room, and the door unlocks. Now, any technician knows immediately, oh, okay, well, there's new vulnerabilities. Like, that's a vulnerability. It already has a little key lock on it, but on top of that, there is this digital lock now, and I can find a way to get around it. Yeah. Well, this company has been around for years. It's called SafeLock, SafeLock. And SafeLock has been one of the largest sellers of these types of digital card access locks for years, over a decade. And a vulnerability was discovered back in, let me see here. They started researching it in late 2022. And it was only a few months after the research that they found that there was a legitimate vulnerability that affected a lot of places.
Made them aware of it immediately.
They made the company, so independent researchers were the ones who discovered this. They made SafeLock, the company, aware of it right away. And so that was in, researchers alerted SafeLock company they started making new locks pretty shortly thereafter. But the thing is, the existing locks either couldn't be updated because they just didn't possess the necessary hardware to do a software.
Yeah, they don't all connect online to be able to push that.
And the ones that could, you know, they could roll that out relatively fast, but even that they didn't do.
Right.
But many of them need actual hardware replacements. Now, for obviously everybody's safety, it's not been revealed publicly which locations that are using SafeLock keys are vulnerable, but I promise you that the people who are interested in exposing this vulnerability,
we'll figure it out.
They'll know. Yeah. So it's about a third of the hotels have been updated so far. So that's still leaving millions of hotel rooms, I'm not going to say unsecure, but vulnerable, to this kind of attack. There is a way for you to identify whether or not the hotel room that you go to. So if you guys are thinking about going on a vacation, you can use the NFC reader inside of an Android phone using an NFC reading app to tell you the version of the SafeLock lock. Huh. And then go to this website called unsafelock.com. And they'll tell you some more details.
And somebody will be with me shortly to come relieve me of my stuff. Yeah.
So this website.
Weird. I wonder how they're going to find out which, yeah, know, which right? hotels have unsecured locks. I know.
So unsafelock.com was purchased as kind of a joke name, but seriously, they're saying it's unsafe, right? Unsafelock.com was purchased by the security researchers who identified the vulnerability. And after enough time had gone by and they realized the company SafeLock wasn't doing anything about it, they've publicly published their findings, mm-hmm. putting a lot more pressure on this company, SafeLock. But in the midst of publicly publishing, let's say that five times fast, their findings, obviously it is now very enticing to anybody who wants to get into a hotel room. Sure. They haven't published exactly how the hack works, but they've published enough information that somebody who knows what they're doing can figure it out. So if you're going on vacation, one of the only things I can really tell you to be extra safe, unless you really want to download the app on your Android phone and use an NFC scanner to verify the version of the safe lock that's on the hotel room door that you've got, just put your stuff inside the little lockbox, because usually that little card doesn't give them access to the safe that's right in there too. So put your valuables in the little safe. It's a good idea. And hopefully at some point in this year, the rest of them will be patched up. But in the meantime, you know, just keep a little extra eye out while you're going on your vacations this year. So this is another AI generated song. I hope you're enjoying it. So Ryan, what was the prompt on this one?
Just like 80s heavy rock introduction that builds up to a heavier climax of all the instruments at once, which, like, if you wait till the last 30 seconds, they're all really going at it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a solo. Yeah. It
really nailed the prompt on that one.
We've listened to kind of three different types of song so far. Have you found a genre of this? Oh, for anybody who's just tuning into what we're talking about is, a website called, Suna.ai. Did I say it right? Suna? I just closed it. There we go. Oh, sorry. Suno. Suno.ai. It's a website that allows you to type in a prompt and then get a AI generated song back for you in like 30 seconds. So have you found any prompts that you've given it for a certain type of song that didn't work yet?
Trying to do the outro for the one where I told you I did a full song, because it would generate clips that were like 7 seconds long, and it would be trying to bring, like, decrescendo it down to be quieter. And there would be some where it's like, it just didn't generate any sound. We've refunded your credits. Sorry.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. Huh. But it, you know, it eventually got there.
Huh.
But that was the only real trouble I ever had with it, trying to get the mark.
Yeah. I'm eager to spend some time with it and see if it can come up with, like, there's certain bands that I feel like have a really iconic sound. Mm. And like there was a band that you said make it kind of sound like this, and it was like, yeah, I kind of hit it.
Yeah.
And then other ones where it's a little bit closer, but like, even if you say, like, Rolling Stones have a very, well, not only like lengthy discography, like they've been going at it for 50 years, but they have like country music that's very country honky tonk sounding, and then they have rock that sounds a lot more modern rock, and then blues that's very traditional blues. And I would be very interested in seeing how it responds to, like, make it a Rolling Stones style blues song.
You'd probably have to specify a little bit more detail about what you want.
Right. Yeah. So I'm kind of interested to play with it a little bit more. So on that note, let me play for everybody another one. I'm going to bring this up on the screen here, and we're going to play another song about the SafeLock.
SafeLock. Yeah. We let this one just cook.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got the lyrics up on the screen here for anybody watching on Rad TV. Let me zoom in real quick so you can see it. And then I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and play this for everybody. So go ahead and listen into the lyrics of this. I'll be honest, it's not a very good song,
but it's a great song.
It's only 1 minute, so yeah. you don't have to listen for very long.
Well, we checked into a fancy hotel, feeling safe and sound in our private suite. Little did we know it was all a charade with a SafeLock lock. The code's not so discreet.
You movies.
Armed with nothing but a hairpin and a grin, we started jiggling and jack.
So just to pause for a second, armed with a hairpin.
Yeah, that, which thinks, was funny. The prompt told it, you know, make a song about a Saflock brand lock being able to be hacked to get into a hotel.
Yeah, and so it didn't stuff. Realize, it didn't like put together the word hack.
Yeah.
Very well, so it's like talking about
kind
using...
Kind of went old school with using a hairpin on it.
Fallout 4 style bobby pin. Yeah.
Find the sweet spot.
Oh, what a sight, in just a matter of minutes, we broke the lock. Leaving no trace, we laughed through the night. Oh, Saflock lock, you thought you were so slick, but with a hairpin and a little
know-how. It's funny how it transitions trick. Like from a what do you call it, into like a chorus.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah.
In a hotel full of security, we caused our own delight.
There it is. There's the minute long. Not very great song, but what not kind very, of genre did you pick?
I said like folksy new age.
Folksy new age?
And it went pop.
Well, that's not the best demo of good music, but it is a good demo of you can just tell it what you wanted to sing about.
That, yeah, and that wasn't somebody's voice. That was an AI synthesizing what it thinks a voice should sound like.
The lyrics were also generated by it, which you basically just tell it, hey, this is what I want my song to be about, and it'll just throw together some lyrics. What Ryan discovered is that it was more effective to use something like ChatGPT to write lyrics for you, or write your own lyrics.
Yeah.
And then say, you know, make a song that's in this style of music using these lyrics, and it'll follow your lyrics. Yep. It'll sing them. Have you tried doing anything like designating use like a high male voice or anything like that?
I have seen ones that where other people who are more skilled at making prompts than I am.
Yeah, prompting is like a whole art form and it's on its own.
But I've seen it can recognize, you know, when to designate certain instruments or to raise an octave or what's a verse and a chorus and a bridge or an outro. And it will try to form the song around those specifics.
So speaking of our song, which was about the safe lock, which was not so safe. Right. I've got a final topic for you guys this week, kind of an interesting one. Safe lock, the vulnerability for this company, along with many other vulnerabilities that eventually become public, come from a couple of different places, not all of them, but many of them. One of them are bug bounties, mm-hmm. where a company like, let's say, Apple says, hey, if you can hack into our stuff, no matter what level that is, tell us how you did it, what you did, where the vulnerability is, and we'll pay you for it.
Yep.
And then depending on, like, if you can get root access to somebody's phone, which basically means you could do whatever you want to the phone, it's like, we'll give you $1 million.
Right.
If you can intercept a text message, we'll give you $100,000, right? So the bounties have different values depending on the level of
severity
to them, right? So those are just kind of open contracts, if you will. And there are people who quite literally make a living off of these open contracts that companies have out there. And every single major software company has these.
Yeah.
Like the major, major ones, Adobe, Apple, Microsoft, they've all got bug bounties out. And there's typically like a list. It's not like publicly available necessarily, but you can apply to be somebody to get one of these bug bounties and then you can start hunting. And another place, which is a little bit more in the news, kind of popular, is there's a variety of these, but they're basically a big convention where a lot of nerds show up. You know, we all have to put our umbrellas on and like put our jackets over our heads to not see the sun, because mm-hmm. we have to go mm-hmm. from the parking lot mm-hmm. to the convention site.
I use the little spinny hat.
Yeah, the spinny hat. Yeah. I wear my big dark glasses to make sure it's not too bright outside. And then we go inside the convention center and then shut the doors and close the blinds. And then at that point, we start demonstrating the things that we've hacked into over the last year. So usually these conventions are annual. There's some in the U.S. There's some outside of the U.S. And in this case, there was one called Pwn to Own. And for those that don't know, it's a little PWN. It kind of means like to...
God, go ahead, do it.
I don't want to. Go ahead. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want to do it. It just means like you won. Okay. I was just going to say it like that. It just means you won. Okay. Yeah, I nailed it. So like I won, you know, all right, fine. So Pwn to Own was the name of the convention, and there was three very successful. There's a lot of successful attacks at these conventions, but three that really stood out. And between a Windows 11, a Tesla, and Ubuntu, which is a Linux operating system, between those three companies, there was $732,000 in reward money paid out, plus a Tesla was given away. And so the Tesla one was interesting because so Teslas use a form of encryption which is notoriously very, very hard to break. And this isn't really an area where you'll hear me fanboy over Tesla so much, because there was no choice. If they didn't use the absolute top tier most complex forms of encryption for a vehicle which can self-drive,
right,
control the gas, the brakes, and the steering,
remote control,
then nobody would be buying this car.
Yeah.
The reason why we're not hearing in the news like, oh, this guy was on the freeway and his Tesla was randomly taken over and he ran through a crowd of vehicles, or what, the reason we don't hear that is because their encryption is so good. Yeah. So in this case, somebody was given access to a Tesla for, I believe they get as long as they want, but within 30 seconds, this guy got full control of the car. Now, that did require him to have full internal access to the vehicle to do this. It's not as easy as just like, oh, you know, he was in another state and he took over.
Yeah.
But in a very short span of time, he was able to get in a vehicle, take full control of it, and get away. As a result, he won the vehicle. And of course, Tesla didn't even announce where the vulnerability was until it was patched.
Yeah.
Right. And that's part of the reason why Tesla's, like cell phones and operating systems on cars, get so many software updates, is that, you know, security is key. But this is going to become much more popular for every kind of vehicle. There's plenty of non-electric cars which are self-driving at this point. You can buy a Ford Expedition, a massive, very heavy SUV that can drive itself down the road. You know, it uses the Ford's what's called Blue Cruise. So yeah, obviously encryption is going to be critical. There was browser zero-day viruses, which basically just means somebody made an exploit which had, or had, sorry, not made, somebody found an exploit inside of Google Chrome or Edge or Safari, and as a result of this exploit being found for the very first time, the company who makes the browser paid out a bounty as well.
Right.
There was over $100,000 paid out just in Chrome and Edge bounties, and it tells you, like, if these guys who are in it for money, you know, to get a check as for winning, if they're that capable to just show up to these conventions and find these vulnerabilities, you can imagine what the guys who know what real money can be made by doing it the bad way,
right,
by taking advantage of people's, you know, cars and accounts and computers and whatever. There's a lot of money to be made by hacking people's stuff. And so every year at these conventions, you'll find that, there's a list of people, and generally speaking, as far as I know, there's never been a convention where it was a complete dud. We're like, all right, well, nobody did anything this year. Pretty much everybody finds something. But you can imagine that at a hotel where a lot of these conventions happen, somebody was like, hey, I got a really fun one to share with everybody. Here's this card that gets into every room in this hotel. Who wants to give it a try? So when this was revealed, obviously, the initial shock is a lot larger than like, oh, somebody found another vulnerability in an operating system. When you can demonstrate it on what people actually have in their, you know, with them, it's a lot scary, a lot more real.
Well, especially knowing the amount of time that's gone by without it being fixed.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah, without it being fixed. So again, I guess I'll leave you off with a friendly little reminder. If you're going to be going on vacation anytime soon and you're going to a hotel room and they use those little key cards, if the brand of the lock is SafeLock, which there's not a lot of identifying information on these locks to tell, but it is there. If you look close enough on most of them, it'll say technically there is a vulnerability. I don't necessarily know how likely it is that you're going to have somebody that's going to try to expose that vulnerability while you're there. But ultimately, the vulnerability does exist. Something to be aware of. And I'll keep on trying to bring you more non-scary news with things like music.
More fun AI.
More fun.
More silly things.
More fun AI silliness. And less your stuff is going to get coming out of a, stolen out of a hotel room, hopefully next week.
Right on.
See you next Tuesday.
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
I'll be back. Goodbye, old friend. May the Force be with you.
Goodbye.